You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today, we have another in our series of audiobook specials. This week, I will be reading a couple of chapters from The Shattering, Legion 2, Sons of Terra. These are two very early chapters. I've chosen two specifically to give you a sense of what the book is like, rather than the very beginning, which sort of ties back into the previous book. I think you don't get any spoilers from the first book with the two chapters that I'm planning to read today. So, first, a couple of words about this book. In addition to my superhero universe, The Sentinels, I also have a sort of science fiction, space opera, military SF universe that's totally unrelated, but is totally interconnected within itself. The main body of it is called The Shattering. The story really begins, as it currently stands, there are more books to be written, with Lucian Dark God's Homecoming. That book focuses mainly on the sort of supernatural, paranormal beings who inhabit my science fiction universe. But it does touch over into the science fictional human realm in several occasions during that story. Then comes the three novels of The Shattering, Legion 1, Lords of Fire, Legion 2, Sons of Terra, and Legion 3, Kings of Oblivion. And then comes Hawk, Hand of the Machine. The books can be read in any order. I personally recommend that you read Hawk before you read the Shattering trilogy. You don't have to, but I suggest that simply because there are a few revelations at the end of the third Shattering volume that maybe hit a little harder if you've already read Hawk. But you don't have to because chronologically Hawk comes last. So, really, you could read them in any order as long as you read Legion 1, Legion 2, and Legion 3 in that order. And that's why I'm going to read a couple of chapters for you that won't spoil anything from the first book, really. Okay, so those five books currently make up my science fiction universe, which is sort of a gothic, dark, a little British flavor to it, I like to think, series of books. I do plan more books to come in the future, and I'll let you folks that are listening here on in on the secret of a couple that I know for sure are coming. I am planning a sort of direct prequel to Lucian Dark God's Homecoming, which will be called Baranak Storming the Gates. That book will give more background on where the gods of Lucian and the later books came from. I'm also planning at least one more book that will come after Legion 3, Kings of Oblivion, and will continue that story forward a bit more, even though I think that the story as it exists in that trilogy currently covers everything you really need, certainly, but there's more to be said, there's more that can be told, and so there'll be at least one more book that comes after that. And then, of course, there are at least two more books that will come after Hawk, a book focusing on Falcon and a book focusing on Raven. Certainly Eagle also at some point deserves something. And I'm also working on a sort of novella that will involve Ixander, the associate in Legion 3 of Agrippa. Ixander appears just a couple of times in The Shattering, but I have definite ideas as to who he is and what he's up to, and so you should see at least a short of him. I'd like to ideally do a number of shorter novellas, possibly only for Kindle, and then maybe collect them as a hardcover or paperback later, about various side characters that are touched on in The Shattering and in Hawk and Lucian, but have other stories that could be told that wouldn't fit into those books. So keep an eye out for those over the next year or two, and I'm planning to get to them as soon as humanly possible. I have lots of ideas. So, all right, so without further ado, let's move into The Shattering, Legion 2, Sons of Terra, written by me, Van Allen Plexico, copyright 2014, and now read by me, the author, Van Allen Plexico. 3. The man to Arjen Dev's right screamed, his right arm shorn off just above the elbow, even as the sentry to his left exploded. The volley of blasts came seemingly from nowhere. A moment earlier, the scene had been one of busy but calm preparation, as legionaries of the Golden Phalanx, better known to most as the Kings of Oblivion, dug trenches and set up mounted weapons and carried supplies and ammunition here and there. The sounds then had been benign, servos whining softly from the gleaming white, Deezing airy Mark V plate armor some of the officers were privileged to wear, as it increased their muscle power and enabled them to do the work of a half dozen or more normal men. The low murmuring of 1,000 well-trained veteran soldiers discussing the myriad things men of war talked about, some meaningless chatter, some the exchange of vitally important information in the hours before an expected battle, orders being passed from trooper to trooper, bickering over slights real or imagined, and good-natured banter. The smells had been of the churned earth, the forest, engine exhaust, machine lubricants, and sweat. An instant later, only a couple of seconds after the sentries to either side of Arjen Dev were struck by a high-discharge energy lance blast, the sounds became shouts of alarm and screams of shock, shock and pain. The smells of the forest and the earth were utterly overwhelmed by smoke from projectile weapons and fires, ozone from energy blasts, and blood. Death in mass, had smells all its own that only veteran soldiers knew, and it was those smells that now suffused the camp, heralding the onslaught to come. Arjen Dev moved instinctively. He was moving before he fully understood what was happening. He threw himself backward from the raised earthwork and rolled, even as sizzling energy blasts struck the ground around him or whizzed past. There was little immediate cover nearby. Only a scant few of the tall, slender tropical trees remained standing in the entire camp. A great deal of forest that filled and surrounded three legions' landing zone had been ripped up, burned, or chopped down. At last, stumbling past a parked hover tank, he scrambled behind it and accessed the ether link, intending to sound the alarm. He needn't have bothered. The attack itself had raised plenty of alarm, and the local ether was filled with urgent reports, orders, and exclamations. In a flash, everything on Eingrad 6 had changed. General Agrippa, having led the assault force down from orbit and having taken command of them personally, had been preparing for a major assault that he had planned to launch with the following dawn. He would not get that chance. Arjen Dev sat crouched behind the hover tank for 3 seconds, seconds that seemed both as brief as the blink of an eye and as long as an eternity. Gathering his wits and his courage, reminding himself that he was a lieutenant in the 3rd Legion, with all that such a distinction carried with it, he stood and drew his blast pistol. Then he leaned around the tank and peered into the smoke and dust in the direction of the attack. What he saw surprised him, to say the least. "We are under attack," came a voice over the ether link, overriding the other signals. It was General Agrippa himself. "All legionaries stand ready to repel enemy advance." "This is very unlike the Riahati," came the voice he quickly recognized as Major Kursk. "Yes," Agrippa agreed. "Does anyone have any intelligence as to what they're trying to do or why? Sentries, have you seen anything that..." Arjandev interrupted the general. He felt under the circumstances it was warranted. "It's not the Riahati, General," he reported. "What?" A pause. "Lieutenant Dev, what are you talking about?"
"I can see the attackers now, sir," Arjandev replied, leaning out from behind the tank again and pulling his head back again just before three devastating blasts narrowly missed him. "It's the Rao."
"The Rao?" The shock in Agrippa's voice was obvious and pronounced. It was clear that he didn't entirely believe Dev's report. "Why would aliens be helping the Riahati attack us?"
The blasts grew more intense, and now were coming from more than one direction. The Rao soldiers, humanoid in general, but somewhat shorter than the average human, and pale blue in skin color on those rare occasions when they were seen outside of their high-tech orange body armor, were flanking his position. He couldn't stay there much longer. In mere moments, they would have him surrounded. But what could he do? Where could he... He looked at the big hunk of metal behind which he had been hiding. He blinked his eyes, registering exactly what it was, then smiled. A second later, he was scrambling up the side of it and back down through the open turret. The inside of the hover tank was dark, but just enough light from the planet's moons was shining down into the interior that he could make out the controls. He moved his hands over the ignition and main power boards, kicking the big machine to life. Lights in a rainbow of colors lit up on the consoles all around him. Reaching up, he grasped the hatch lid and pulled it closed. Simultaneously, the tank reached nominal power output and rose smoothly into the air, living up to its name by hovering approximately 3 feet off the ground. Shots rang off the vehicle's armored hide. This didn't worry Arjandev terribly much, though he himself was not a tanker and had never trained extensively in one. He knew the basics. The armor of a 3rd Legion hover tank was thick and very strong, made from a single force-grown crystal of hyper-dense molecular structure, lined with a mixture of light, strong metal alloys and exotic ceramics. The weaponsmiths of the Kings of Oblivion had developed this particular formula themselves and had never shared the full details of the process with even their counterparts in the other legions. The tankers who manned the vehicles likewise trained long and hard in the most rigorous of environments and simulations. As a result, Agrippa's tank corps had achieved a reputation unmatched in the realm of armored cavalry. The soldiers of the 3rd Legion took great pride in this, even those who, like Dev, were not assigned to tank duty. Arjandev manipulated the controls of the tank deftly, spinning the big machine around. His first thought was to use it to retreat back to the main camp from the front line, the spot where, as a sentry infantryman, he had been posted to keep an eye on the Riahati. But then he hesitated, looking around him. He was sitting inside a hover tank. Someone in the 3rd Legion had parked it there for some inscrutable reason, but there was no sense in turning down a gift like that now. Dev spun the tank around, presenting its most heavily armored section of hull to the advancing Rao aliens in their orange armor. They were charging on foot, already climbing over the raised earth embankment Dev had spent the earlier portion of the evening sitting behind. Their energy lances and power rifles were spitting blindingly bright blobs and streaks of superheated gas and barely contained pulses of energy, along with solid projectiles and slugs. Their assault was impressive indeed, as long as their opponents consisted of mere sentries with sidearms. Laughing now, Arjandev swung the main turret around and lined both the heavy cannon and the smaller anti-personnel weapon up in the direction of the enemy. He fired. The main cannon blasted first. A huge, shimmering cylinder of raw energy lashed out, smashing into the center of the Rao advance. It vaporized the half-dozen alien soldiers it struck directly, then hit the earthworks mere inches from where Dev himself had been crouching before. The embankment exploded, further shredding the Rao line. Before the alien attackers could recover, Dev's smaller automatic gun that was positioned just to the right of the main cannon began to spit sizzling death. It carved into the stunned and reeling Rao on either side of the ragged hole in the embankment, slicing them down one by one. Scarcely 10 seconds after Arjen Dev had climbed into the tank, he'd taken out half of the attacking force at his position. "What's happening there?" demanded Agrippa over the ether link. "I'm seeing firing from our side of the line." Dev keyed the link. "This is Lieutenant Dev, General. I have commandeered a hover tank and am attempting to blunt the Rao advance." A pause, then, "Good man, Dev. Excellent work. We are on our way now." The link closed. Dev shrugged to himself and continued to fire, sweeping the turret around 45 degrees to carve into the right flank of the assault force. The Rao looked surprised now, or as surprised as aliens in armor and helmets that totally covered their bodies and faces could look. Their well-organized ranks were shattered, and individuals scrambled here and there, not unlike what Deb had done some moments earlier. Watching them from inside the tank as he fired, he relished how the shoe was now on the other foot. Feeling increasingly confident, he stood from the driver's seat, moved one step to his right, and reached for the driving controls, moving the big vehicle forward slowly. It wasn't easy to do that and work the weapons controls at the same time, but he moved incrementally, taking every opportunity to break up any concentration of enemy troops as he went. It looked to him as if the Rao were falling back now. The thought that he might have single-handedly won this battle before anyone else from his side had even arrived began to bounce around in his brain, and he grinned. The hover tank moved over the earthworks, angling upward as it went, then back down the other side. It bounced momentarily as it reacquainted itself with gravity and proper orientation. Stopping again, Dev returned to the gunner's seat and peered out the main sight. He gasped. Instead of the backs of a few dozen retreating Rao, he found himself face to armored face with a veritable ocean of Rao troops. From just ahead of him, practically to the horizon, all he could see was pale orange armor. They looked like ants that had been stirred up from their hill. "We're here, Dev," came the booming voice of Agrippa over the link. "Coming up just behind your position." Arjen Dev opened and closed his mouth soundlessly for a second in shock. "We'll finish off the stragglers," Agrippa was continuing. "I'd like a few prisoners to interrogate." "General!" Dev all but shouted over the link. "Stay back! There are too many!" Silence for a moment. Then, "What's that, Lieutenant?" Arjen Dev spun the turret around so that it was facing towards the approaching troops of 3rd Legion, so that he could get a look at them. They were already there, though, rushing past his tank on either side. At the head of the force ran General Agrippa himself. The big man leapt to the top of a still-intact section of earthworks, raising his quad rifle high in one hand and his gladius in the other. "Advance, men!" he boomed. He looked to Dev like a god among men, tall and majestic and powerful. A barrage of energy blasts came at him from beyond, and at least two of them glanced off his white armor. He tumbled off the rise and fell heavily to the ground. As attendants rushed to Agrippa's aid, Arjen Dev keyed the ether link again. "There are thousands of them," he cried over the mental communications network. "It's an entire army!" The legionaries hesitated in their advance, looking to the fallen Agrippa uncertain. Agrippa pulled his massive armored form back up onto his feet. "The lieutenant is right," he sent. "Pull back. We must regroup and prepare a more effective force." A pause as various subordinates acknowledged the order. Then, "You too, Dev, bring that tank back to the main camp with you. We'll need it." "Understood, General," Dev replied. "I've already called in a little help," Agrippa added. As energy blasts, in increasing force and number, continued to ring off the hull, Arjen Dev hauled the tank around and accelerated back toward the base. At that moment, the ether link crackled to life again on a private channel. Eyes widening at what he saw in his virtual vision, he keyed it. "Yes, General?" "That was good work back there, Dev," the big man told him. "You may have saved a good portion of our army, not to mention me." Dev smiled. "My pleasure, General," he hesitated a moment. "But what is it, Lieutenant?" "Are we retreating, sir? I thought we never did that. Never." "Retreating?" The incredulity in Agrippa's voice was powerful and heartening. "Don't be silly, Lieutenant. Take a look at about 2 o'clock and up toward the sky." Steering the hover tank deftly, he was better at it than he'd expected he'd be. Dev snuck a quick look through the view scope in the direction the general had indicated. At first, he couldn't understand what he was seeing. It appeared as if about a dozen men were floating in the air, slowly descending. But that couldn't be right. They were too far away. The shape of what he was seeing fought with the sense of distance and scale within his mind for a couple of seconds before suddenly it all snapped into place. In spite of himself, he gasped. A group of man-shaped Imperial Colossus walkers were settling to the ground. The heavily armed and armored machines had 2 legs, 2 arms, a torso, and a head. But beyond that, all resemblance to a human being ended, not least of which because each of them was some 200 meters tall. They were engines of pure, unadulterated destruction, and the general had just committed a dozen of them to this battle. "Retreating?" Agrippa repeated over the link, laughing. "Son, I'm simply reloading." Four. The huge double doors of the throne room swung open with a crash, instantly dissipating the previously oppressive, almost palpable gloom that had filled the chamber. Caught by surprise, ceremonially armed and crimson-robed Sand King's guards reacted with a start, moving away from their usual positions along the walls and hurrying forward, their ornamented but effective golden energy rifles at the ready. On his throne, the planetary governor, Ramses, jerked awake from the latest of his recent string of nightmares and sat up straight. Scowling at the interruption, he peered through the dimly lit space and attempted to understand exactly what he was seeing. Through the now open doorway glided a figure all in black. A peaked hood covered its head and obscured its face in shadow. A few paces behind came a quartet of muscular bronze-skinned men, all partially clad in black metal armor of some unrecognizable sort, each holding up one corner of a rectangular palanquin. The Sand King's guards hurried to interpose themselves between the intruders and their ruler. Scarcely had they moved into place, however, before the man in black gestured at them with his right hand, and they began to fall back, making way. "What is this?" demanded Ramses, now fully awake and seeing his troops moving aside for this newcomer. He smoothed the wrinkles in his luxurious purple and red robes, the woven gold trim gleaming in the dim candlelight. His voice cracked, but was still strong. Who are you?" The figure in black ignored him for the moment. Instead, it gestured to its right in silent command, and the 4 bearers instantly obeyed, carrying their burden to the area indicated. The figure gestured and spoke a soft word, inaudible to Ramses only a short distance away. The 4 slaves instantly knelt in 1 smooth movement, lowering the rectangular platform to the cold marble floor. As it touched down, Ramses could at last fully see what was carried upon it. A small cube of dark red, roughly 6 inches to the side, and a broad but shallow bowl or basin of gold, slightly more than 2 meters wide. Ramses' eyes darted from the objects to the silent figure and back again. "What is the meaning of this?" he called down, but the force of his words had already faded somewhat. His eyes were now locked onto the 2 objects that had been revealed. Standing, never taking his eyes off them, he hurried down the steps of the dais which held his throne. "Gifts," the dark figure stated, breaking its silence at last. The voice was low and gravelly. Spindly fingers drew back the hood. "Gifts from my master." With seemingly great effort, Ramses tore his eyes away from the 2 objects and glanced quickly at the man whose head was now revealed. He looked at him just long enough to get a general impression, very pale, very slender, angular face, short and spiky hair, and then turned back to the palanquin. "Who are you then, and who is your master?" he asked. He felt somehow he should know the answer to the second question, but no name came to his mind as he considered it. "You are in my throne room, on my world," he said. "You will answer."
"I am called Zahir," replied the man in black.
Still distracted, Ramses nodded at this. "Zahir, a good name, a godly name." He glanced very briefly at the man again. "It was carried by one of the 75, the lost gods, the gods who died the final death."
"No," the figure in black stated.
Ramses blinked at this unexpected response. He frowned.
"No, no what? The name Zahir is well known as having belonged to one of the dead gods."
"No," the figure repeated. Ramses' anger grew. It was enough now to drag his attention away from the two shiny objects on the palanquin.
"No? What do you mean by no?" he demanded. "Do you dispute the fact that the name you bear was also borne by a god?"
"Certainly not," the figure in black replied. He looked up at Ramses, and his mouth split into a smile both humorless and disturbing.
"I merely dispute the claim that I am dead."
Ramses stared back at him for a long moment, then blinked, shook his head, and laughed sharply.
"Ah, I see what you are saying now. Very clever, very funny."
The man in black simply stared back at him, his gaze flat and almost lifeless.
"You know my master, do you not?"
Ramses' smile faded. For a moment he said nothing. Then he looked away, saw his soldiers standing idly by with glassy eyes and vacant expressions, and nodded.
"Yes," he said, as an image swirled into and back out of his consciousness. "Yes, I believe I do."
Zahir chuckled softly.
"And knowing his identity, you would yet believe anything impossible?"
Ramses stood up to his full height, turning his back on the palanquin with great reluctance. He loomed nearly a foot taller than Zahir.
"So I am supposed to believe that you are a god?"
"What you believe of me is immaterial," the dark man replied.
"What matters is that you understand I am here in the place of my master, and that I have been sent to advise you. You will follow my instructions as you would his, and you will follow them implicitly."
"Instructions?" Ramses bellowed. "I am the ruler of this entire world, and soon of much more besides.
You would have me follow?" He practically spat the word. "I follow no one."
Zahir's eyes met Ramses and held them. The temperature in the room dropped dramatically. Ice began to form on the stone floor and along the walls.
"Yes," the dark man said, his voice hard now. "Yes, precisely. You follow no one, for as far as this empire is concerned, I do not exist. I am indeed no one."
Though not a tall figure, Zahir now seemed somehow to loom over the governor, to tower over him. Eyes wide, Ramses shrank back, shivering from the cold. A moment later, his face slowly relaxed. At last, he nodded.
"Yes, yes, of course. I will follow."
Zahir stared at him, his dark eyes cold and penetrating.
"What of the girl?" he asked, his voice intense.
"The girl?" The dark man said nothing, merely waiting, his gaze seemingly locking the governor to the spot.
"You mean the princess, of course," Ramses said, as if remembering something long forgotten. "Indeed, the Princess Marins. My master gave her over into your care."
"Yes, it didn't take long for us to discover who she was."
"You have kept her safe?"
"Yes, yes, she is fine. Too young to fully understand what has happened. Growing impatient to see her family." He snorted at that. "But still firmly under control, of course." Zahir continued to hold Ramses with his eyes for a long second more, as if judging his words. Then he released him and turned away. Ramses blinked, gasped, then exhaled slowly, his face darkening.
"You, how dare you?"
Zahir ignored the anger and gestured toward the palanquin. Now his voice was relaxed and almost casual in its tones. My master sends his greetings, his regards, and three gifts. Gifts of immense value. Gifts? Recovering himself, Ramses turned back to the rectangle where it now sat on the floor. Well, most generous of him. Squinting, he moved closer, as though trying to get a better look at what sat upon it. But I only see two objects here. Yes, the third will arrive shortly. Zaheer paused. It will not seem a gift at all at first, but shortly thereafter you will learn to your wonder and awe that it is the grandest gift of all. Zaheer strode over to the palanquin and reached down, grasping the crimson cube in his claw-like right hand. He held it aloft, the frightening smile back on his face. It began to glow brighter and brighter by the second, as if from some hidden internal source of light. Only 12 of these were ever made when the Ancient Ones were at the height of their power and their craft. Most have been lost for eons. My master gives you this, one of the very few remaining, as his first gift. Ramses moved forward and frowned, his eyes locked onto the object, his expression one of deep desire. He tried to sound flippant as he replied, A lovely music box or puzzle, I'm sure. But there was no conviction in his voice. He was entranced by the box, with its dazzling radiance and swirling intricate patterns across the surface. Take it, said Zaheer, holding it out for him. Ramses needed no further prompting. Greedily he seized the cube and clutched it to himself. He had no idea what it could be, but something about it utterly entranced him. For several seconds nothing happened, though that scarcely seemed to bother Ramses, as he appeared content merely to hold the thing. Then the light radiating from within it spread, quickly enveloping his entire body. It flared almost blindingly bright for a moment, crying out. The Sand King's guards, now recovering their wits at last, hurried forward at the defense of their ruler. But the brightness faded as quickly as it had appeared, and Ramses still stood there, unharmed. Unharmed, but different. The Sand Kings all exclaimed in surprise and astonishment. Ramses, planetary governor of Akhenaton, now stood encased in a dark red metallic armor that nearly covered his entire body. Only his face was exposed from within a helmet that blended seamlessly into the rest of the suit. His musculature appeared dramatically increased, bulging against the seemingly pliable surface of the suit. The ornamental line work that had covered the cube now covered the armor. The arms and legs featured dull rivets along the sides. Epaulets stood out at the shoulders, and two veins or blunted blades protruded out from either side of the helmet. In sum, the armor appeared at least as impressive as anything worn by the Imperial Legions, and far less bulky and heavy than the crystal armor of the old Emperor's Guard. Ramses looked down at himself in shock. He raised one arm, flexed the fingers, then did likewise with the other. He moved his head back and forth. There was no resistance, as if the material were smart cloth and not some hyper-dense and strong metal as it appeared. Then he looked up at Zaheer, a smile slowly formed on his face. "You approve, then?" the other asked. "Yes," Ramses answered. "It is remarkable, marvelous." But why? There is more to that armor than you yet know, the man answered. Patience, all will be revealed. Ramses nodded. Very well. He moved as if to pull the gloves of the armor off, only to discover that there were no seams, no divisions in the cold metal material. How do I? You have but to desire it. Ramses frowned, then closed his eyes. A second later, the armor was gone from him, and the crimson cube back in his hand. Holding it aloft before his face, he smiled at it, then at Zaheer. Well, he said, one can only hope all of your master's gifts are so interesting. And saying that, he looked back at the palanquin and the golden basin that still rested upon it. Zahir motioned again, and two of his servants lifted the object. They carried it off the palanquin and set it down gently on the marble floor at the center of the chamber, a short distance away from the steps leading up to the throne. Ramses followed them and stared at it, studying it. Broad and round and golden, it looked like a sort of overgrown bowl or dish, more than 2 meters in diameter and less than a meter high. Its sides sloped gently in and down towards a depression at the center. Leaning down and reaching out, Ramses ran his fingers along the edge. "So what is it?" Zahir smiled. "It is a doorway." Ramses reacted to this news with a start. "A doorway? It's the strangest-looking doorway I've ever seen." "And the most marvelous doorway you will ever see." Zahir leaned out over the basin and stretched out his clawed hand, moving his fingers in a series of odd gestures. Then he reached into his robes and brought forth a gleaming silver knife. As Ramses and the Sand Kings looked on in alarm, he drew the blade across his palm. Blood dripped out and down into the basin, blood that sparkled and shimmered with some sort of contained energy. As the drops splattered onto the shining surface of the bowl, the air suddenly seemed filled with a soft, persistent buzzing sound. Ramses and the others looked around, half expecting to see swarms of insects descending upon them, but that was not the case. The buzzing, as they quickly realized, was coming from all around, from the air itself, from reality itself, as it was being torn asunder. A flash, a blast of fire erupting from the basin. When it had died down, a shimmering circle remained floating vertically in the air above it. "A doorway," Zahir repeated. Ramses gawked. "A doorway," he said, agreeing now. "But to where?" "To everywhere," the pale man answered. That was two early chapters from Legion 2, Sons of Terra, by Van Allen Plexico, read by me, Van Allen Plexico. I hope you enjoyed it. As I said at the beginning, you can begin this story almost anywhere you like. Begin with the laying of the foundations of the cosmology of this universe, with Lucian Dark God's Homecoming, which is basically a murder mystery and a chase action drama, with sort of mythological and human characters combined, and a science fiction far future space opera universe as the setting. It is quite the combination mashup of different subgenres, but is probably my most popular novel I've ever written. There is Hawk, Hand of the Machine, which is a post-apocalyptic action adventure with a mystery wound up in it too. I enjoy putting mysteries into most of my stories. And then The Shattering sort of fits in between them chronologically in terms of the story. But again, you can read them in any order. They are available on Kindle. They are in paperback on Amazon.com. Any bookstore can get them in. And Legions 1, 2, and 3 as a combined omnibus of The Shattering are also available on Amazon, as well as limited edition hardcovers of the books. I hope that you will check them out, and I hope you enjoyed this reading from the book today. With our next episode, we'll have a new guest and get back on to talking about the latest in popular culture. My time is up. The Rocket's got to get out of here for another week. I hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you down the road. Don't forget to visit www.whiterocketbooks.com.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.